It was just a few years ago when a Boulder Valley Middle School student named Nelson told KGNU that unless he packed a snack from home, it was easy to fill up on school-provided junk.
The period after lunch I have is one of the most hyper periods I have because all the kids have just eaten like cookie dough or something.
That cookie dough used to be sold by Boulder Valley School's food service department in a snack line brimming with pizza, candy bars, frosted malts, chocolate muffins, and chips. That snack line was a major profit center for the money-strapped school lunch program. But parents in those days worried that all that junk was overly enticing to a captive audience of kids. Those parents were battling to ban those junky snacks. Meanwhile, most kids were battling to keep them.
We like all of them.
We like the ice cream and stuff, and if they took them away, then
and we like bagels.
We don't want them to go.
And we like Gatorade and drinks and chips and cookies and everything.
Cookies!
In those days, it seemed impossible that children would ever be able to stand a lunch without their sugary snacks. But now, fast forward a few years to the present day, when the best deal in Boulder on a healthy, freshly made meal that's free from sugar is probably the Boulder Valley School lunch. Here's the hot lunch that students were eating last week at Douglas Elementary.
Tess, what grade are you?
Fourth.
What are you having for lunch?
Taco, orange juice, cucumbers, and ranch.
Did somebody make you get those cucumbers?
No.
What's inside your taco?
Meat and cheese.
Did you choose what would be inside your taco?
Yes.
How does it all taste?
Good.
Landon.
Can you say what grade you're in?
Second.
What's on your plate?
A burrito, rice, beans, a pear, and eggs.
Did you get to choose what to eat?
Yes.
How does this food taste?
Good.
Some kids at Douglas were eating sugary snacks, but only if they brought them from home in a sack lunch.
I brought peanut butter and jelly, whipped yogurt, and Doritos, and a Squiggle fruit bar.
So the first ingredient of your Yoplait.
So the first ingredient is milk, and the second ingredient is corn syrup.
I had chips, a bar, and some candy.
A couple Oreos and goldfish and some almonds. And I had a piece of candy for snack.
Even among the sack lunch students, most said that they think the hot lunch is tastier at school these days.
Most of the time they're pretty good. Last year they changed it this year, so I like this year's better than last year's.
As for the lunch and custodial staff, here's what they have to say.
I have many children eating from the salad bar even when they bring cold lunch. I have many, many teachers saying, I haven't eaten this much school lunch in years.
At first, I think the organic word alone threw them away because they weren't familiar with the organic word. But after they found out, yes, it's real milk, they went for it.
Douglas Elementary's principal says these healthier lunches help student performance and behavior.
Food is one part of the whole educational experience, and if we're giving kids healthy food choices, so I think we are seeing some positive additions.
What happened when you announced to the children and their families that there would be no more chocolate milk?
I did get a couple of grumblings. I think I've heard from two children about no more chocolate milk, but beyond that, I've seen kids going for the regular milk with no complaint, and I don't think it's been missed at all.
Are they also drinking more water?
They're drinking more water and drinking more milk. We have already prohibited pop and other sugary drinks within the lunchroom.
I see kids are eating fruit and not brownies or cookies.
We don't offer dessert. Our dessert option is fresh fruit.
All this has happened at Boulder Valley schools because parents took a stand and demanded healthier choices for Boulder Valley kids. And as part of providing those healthier choices, they brought in a nationally acclaimed school lunch expert, Ann Cooper, to head up Boulder Valley School's food service programs.
Ann Cooper, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too.
And congratulations on all your awards. Can you say a few of them?
Some of my awards? Well, I have an honorary doctorate. I got an award from Self Magazine and Kashi, Women Doing Good. I had an award from Slow Food. I've gotten awards from the American Culinary Federation.
Why did you come to Boulder?
I was recruited to come to Boulder. I had been working in Berkeley for four years, and a number of people from Boulder really wanted to see change happen, and they talked to me about it a couple different times, and over time, eventually, we came and did a feasibility study, and eventually, we came to start working on the district itself.
Now, I was just hanging out there with the students, and they are eating lunch. A lot of them are eating the food that they're getting for lunch.
Yes.
Now, Ann Cooper, you're called the renegade food nutritionist.
Renegade lunch lady.
You really are.
Well, I'm not sure. You know, is it renegade to want kids to eat fruit and vegetables? Is it renegade to want kids to eat food without high fructose corn syrup and trans fats? You know, it's unfortunate in our society if that's what renegade is.
Well, I've been in a lot of different schools recently, and everywhere else, all of the kids are being given chocolate milk and strawberry milk. They have an option of the white milk. Hardly anybody chooses that. And the rationale is that kids will not drink milk, and they need their calcium, so they have to have the sweetened milk. What do you think of that?
I think it's ridiculous, and I should tell you that I was interviewed recently by the AP Associated Press because the National Dairy Council is coming out with a national campaign to promote kids drinking flavored milks. I think it's unconscionable. The amount of sugar that's in chocolate and strawberry milk is ridiculous. On an ounce-for-ounce basis, if you use skim milk or skim chocolate milk, skim milk's about 100 calories, skim chocolate or strawberry can be 150 or 60, and if you look at that per gram amount of sugar in flavored milk versus the per gram amount of sugar in an ounce of soda, often the flavored milks is just as high. And if a child chooses chocolate or strawberry milk for 180 days of a school year, they could gain as much as 5 pounds from that sugar. And here's the deal. Children don't need milk. Children need calcium. So why don't we serve beans and leafy greens and cheese and yogurt and cottage cheese? You know, they don't need milk, they need calcium. And milk can be absolutely part of a healthy diet, but it doesn't have to be the only thing kids are given.
But Ann Cooper, children also need vitamin D, and milk is fortified with vitamin D.
All milk is fortified with vitamin D, you know, and they also could play outside and get vitamin D. It's in the sunshine.
Do children actually, for a good part of the year, get more vitamin D if they're out in the sunshine playing? And exercising, do they build healthier bones by exercising or drinking milk?
Well, you absolutely, all weight-bearing exercise builds bones. And kids need both. I mean, you know, I'm not saying that kids don't need calcium. They do. And milk can be part of that. But to say that kids aren't going to get enough calcium unless we serve them sugar is just ridiculous. It's like saying we need kids to get vitamin C, so we should give them Bloody Marys because tomato juice has a lot of vitamin C in it. I mean, what a ridiculous thing to say.
What kind of milk to serve children in schools continues to be controversial. The vast majority of schools in Colorado probably do serve flavored milks to children, but Ann Cooper isn't the only one who thinks that chocolate milk doesn't have a place in schools. She has an ally in Walt Willett. Walt Willett heads up the Harvard School of Nutrition and Public Health. He's been a longtime opponent of flavored milk in schools. In fact, he says that in most cases, the campaigns for milk mustaches aren't so much healthy for children's bones as they're healthy for profits at dairy companies.
Calcium is clearly an essential nutrient. We have to have some, but just how much we need, and of course, what form it comes in, is a very, I think, unsettled issue.
Walter Willett chairs the nutrition department of the Harvard School of Public Health and is the author of Eat, Drink, and Be Healthy. He says the growth hormones in milk may increase the chance of breast cancer, while the calcium advertised in dairy promotion does little to prevent broken bones, unlike exercise, which consistently protects bone structure.
Every study shows major benefit of physical activity for reducing fracture risk, but you do not see the same level of promotion of physical activity as you do for 3 glasses of milk a day, and as indicated in the Milk Mustache campaign. So I think if you are interested in fractures, what you really want to do is don't milk your cow, take your cow for a walk.
That was Walter Willett, head of the Harvard School of Public Health. Now let's go back to Ann Cooper, head of food services for Boulder Valley Public Schools.
So at the Legacy Foundation conference yesterday, not because of the conference, but I found out that the National Dairy Council was coming out with a big promotion nationwide to promote flavored milks. And I really think that this is unconscionable. And so I brought it up at the conference. And so there was a lot of dialogue. It's certainly controversial. There are certainly people who believe that, you know, it's best nutritionally for kids to have a lot of milk. And if kids won't drink white milk, then give them chocolate and strawberry. I'm totally against that. But there's a whole lot of people who think that. And so there was a lot of discussion about this yesterday. And I'm glad there was discussion, because I may be seen as a crazy person on this issue, but at least people are talking, and I think that's what's really important.
Do you agree with Walt Willick about milk? He says, don't milk your cow for strong bones. Take your cow for a walk.
Yeah, I love Walt Willick. That's perfect. Take your cow for a walk for strong bones. That's perfect.
We also talked with Ann Cooper about a new study that has just come out last week about how sweet flavors given habitually over time can cause an addiction that's similar to addiction to any kind of drug. We talked about Pietro Cotone of Boston University and his study of this addictive possibility with sweet flavors with Ann Cooper.
Now we have rats emulating what children eat. And so what happened to the rats?
Just changing the nutrients so that the taste sensation was that extremely sweet taste sensation. They had rats that became anxious, nervous, sort of depressed behaving, and anhedonic, meaning that they lost their joy in life. They seemed to be more likely to be not eating the regular chow when it was fed, and they would be nervous and anxious and unhappy rats.
Well, and that is exactly what happens to children. So it's crazy when the National Dairy Council says we have to promote chocolate or strawberry milk to kids, and we know they don't need the sugar, they don't need the heightened anxiety. They, you know, we've got an obesity crisis in this country. What is wrong? You know, and if there's no chocolate milk, their kids drink milk or they'll drink water. They don't need to drink sugar.
Some other interesting angles about this study were that it's not that the chocolate chow made the rats happier. It's not like it was a treat for them. It was more that it triggered an addictive response. The reason that they ate a lot of chocolate chow on the days when it was available, and they tended to overeat it that day, was not because they were getting more pleasure. It was blunting the pain of the fact that they were addicted now to the chocolate chow.
Well, all I can say is I can't wait to get my eyes onto this report in this study, because I hope it helps us understand why we shouldn't have flavored sugared milks in schools. That's exactly what it's doing to the children. And here in Boulder, and this was also true in Berkeley, there's no chocolate milk. And let me tell you, no child ever died because we didn't give them chocolate milk. No child got sick because they didn't get chocolate milk. No child died because they didn't get chocolate milk. And over time, and not even that long, within a couple of months, kids drink just as much milk as they did before, when that's what they had to, you know, they drink milk and they drink water. Yay!
You want to hear one other detail of this study?
Please.
All right, so these were rats. These were not people. In these lab tests, they do kill the animals at some point and then check to see what was happening to their brains. And in this case, they did a very meticulous check of the brains. And what they found was that there was a stress hormone. It was normal in most every part of the brain except the amygdala, the fight or flight panic button. And there, it was very, very elevated. And so not only was this a perception that simply having that intense flavored sweet caused the rats to behave differently, but it changed one of the most powerful brain centers of the body and put the stress button on high.
I have a great story for you. I worked for quite a little while in Harlem, New York, in Harlem. And I was working with some kids called Eat Wise, Enlightened and Aware Teens Who Inspire Smart Eating. And we did a PBS show. And when we were taping the show at one point, I said, so what'd you guys have for breakfast? What'd you kids have for breakfast? And you know, I'm a country girl, they're city kids. They said snack crack. I said, what? They said snack crack. I said, what are you guys talking? They said, well, you know what, parents go out and get crack on the street to get high. All we need is a 20-ounce Coke and a bag of M&Ms, and we get just as high. And the kids know. These were 14 and 15 and 16-year-old kids. They know what happens. They know they get high. They know they crash. The kids could tell us. Now we need to, you know, check on the rats to see if it's really making sense to what happens with the kids. But it's no wonder that we have behavioral problems with kids. It's no wonder that that it makes such a difference to have a universal breakfast program that has complex carbohydrates, so kids aren't drinking, you know, Coke and Pop-Tarts for breakfast.
Now, I do notice that you have carbohydrates in these meals that tend to be the kind that don't break down as quickly in the body, that break down more slowly so that the sugar in them gets absorbed more slowly. They're low glycemic carbs.
Absolutely. And that means, you know, that we don't serve white rice, we only serve brown rice, which, you know, is a complex carbohydrate. It's a whole grain, but it breaks down slower on the glycemic index. We don't serve a lot of potatoes because they tend to be, and even though most of the vegetables most schools serve are French fries because it's a vegetable, you know, we serve potatoes maybe once a week. We serve a lot of whole grains. In fact, all of our grains and all of our baked products are whole grains, whether it's hamburger rolls or hot dog rolls or breads. So yes, it's really important that kids get whole grains and complex carbohydrates that are slow burns.
Now, the kids here are choosing pears for lunch. They're choosing whole pears on their own. They're not being made to get this. They're choosing them here today.
I know. And what's really interesting is in all the elementary schools, you might also notice that there's fruit cut in half and whole fruit. And we're cutting the apples today are cut in half, so the kids could just choose a half an apple. But I'm watching the kids choose the pears. And even though some of the pears are a little spotted, the kids are taking the pears, and that's great. And they're spotted not because they're bad, but because they're ripe.
The other part that I'm observing, there's a salad bar, and the salad bar does not just have iceberg lettuce in it. Can you describe what's in that salad bar?
I can, and there would be no iceberg lettuce in it.
But that's the normal lettuce for school lunches, Ann Cooper.
I know it is, but there's no nutritional value in iceberg lettuce. Iceberg lettuce is white because it's water. There's not even any chlorophyll in it, hardly. No, so there's a mesquite mix, you know, a basic salad green mix, and there's also romaine lettuce. There's carrots, peppers, cherry tomatoes, celery. There's also plant protein. So we have, there's probably garbanzo beans and or kidney beans. There's cottage cheese, there's chicken and or eggs. So we have animal protein, plant protein, and we have lots of fresh produce as well.
Do the kids eat it?
Yes. In fact, I will tell you that in our school district, we're spending $12,000 a week on fresh produce. And this is a school district of 30,000 kids.
Is this whole program then a lot more expensive than regular food?
Well, it's not more expensive than regular food, but it is more expensive than regular school food. Most schools are spending 90 cents, maybe 95 cents on lunch. We're spending about $1.20. So it is more expensive. But if you can raise participation, you can become financially viable.
What is happening with your plate waste? Is it gone up or has it gone down?
We're just starting our plate waste studies, so I can't tell you for sure, but anecdotally I can say it seems to me that kids are eating more of the food they're taking.
Do you allow kids to have things like olive oil? Can they increase the fat in their diet if they want to, as long as it's a healthy fat?
We don't have olive oil and balsamic vinegar out on the salad bars yet, but we will. And the only reason we don't yet is because everything's so new, we have to kind of train on one thing at a time, and a bottle of olive oil out on a salad bar needs to also have some education that goes with it. But yes, over time they will be able to do that, and it's really important for kids to have fat. Kids should not be on low-fat diets. Kids need fat, but they need to be plant-based, healthy fats, and very low on things like saturated fats.
How about the commodity program? One way that most schools can pay for food is by getting it on the government commodity programs that make it far less expensive. How about this fancy fresh stuff that you're providing? Is it something you can get on commodity programs?
No, absolutely not. You can't get it on commodities. We do get our allotment of commodities, just like any other school district does, but we choose to get mostly brown box. That means instead of getting chicken nuggets, or that's not a good example, instead of getting a pre-processed, pre-made grilled cheese sandwich, we get 40-pound blocks of cheese and grate it and do whatever we will with it.
You make it from scratch.
We make everything. Well, not everything. We either make stuff from scratch or have it made for us specifically to our specifications. So we, by and large, we don't have chicken nuggets and tater tots and a lot of those things that typical schools use out of the commodity food program.
I noticed that you have the juice to the side in small contained cups. You have the milk in unlimited supply, and the water. Kids can push a button and get as much of those as they want. It almost looks like you have the juice set aside as a bit of a controlled substance.
Yeah, and I don't want people to think that juice, and we only serve 100% juice, is a controlled substance. But there's a lot of sugar in juice, and kids shouldn't be drinking it all the time, and they shouldn't be drinking a lot of it. So, yes, in our world, kids can drink as much milk as they want, have as much water as they want, but juice is not an unlimited quantity at all.
I've been in some schools where the teachers' aides come by after school, if there are kids after school, and they bring in the Goldfish crackers, or they bring in as a special treat the Hostess powdered chocolate cupcakes or donuts. And the kids love this. I mean, the kids just are so happy, and everybody thinks they're doing something nice for the children. What do you think?
You know, I think that there is everyday food and special occasion food, and I think we all need treats. Now, my idea of a treat might be champagne and oysters, you know, but even if my idea of a treat is champagne and oysters, I'm not going to have that every day. I might have it once a month because it's a treat, and it's something that I want. And I don't think there's anything wrong with brownies as a treat or cupcakes as a treat or anything as a treat. But a treat means it's something we don't do all the time, and we're not doing children any good by teaching them that every meal ends with sugar and that every afternoon starts with sugar. That's not everyday food.
And how about children in a setting like school where each person doesn't get to see the other times that somebody brought a sweet treat to the children, where they kind of think they're the one person who has treated the kids this day?
Well, I think that's exactly right. I mean, it's like birthday parties. One of the things that, you know, we recommend to schools instead of having birthday parties for every single kid's birthday is there's birthdays once a month. Because if you figure there's 20 kids in the class, there could be 20, you know, 20 birthdays, which would be two birthdays a month. Plus there's at least one or two holidays every month. That means there could be a big party once a week. And that's just a tremendous amount of sugar. And that's during the week, never mind what happens at home. Two things I think it's really important for people to realize is this is a social justice issue. The CDC, the Center for Disease Control, has said of the children born in the year 2000, one out of every three Caucasians and one out of every two African Americans and Hispanics will have diabetes in their lifetime. This is going to result in this generation, these nine-year-old kids, being the first in our country's history to die at a younger age than their parents. And the children that this most affects are the children in most need. So kids who come from at-risk families and also potentially are the ones that are going to get sick younger and stay sick longer are the ones who really need the most help. And so schools really, from a social justice perspective, should absolutely make sure that all kids are fed healthy food. You know, there's 1.1 million hungry children a day in America. That's unconscionable. Hungry children can't think, malnourished children can't learn, and we need to make sure that every child, every day in America, as a birthright, is fed in school and is fed a delicious, nutritious meal so they can be the best they can be.
Thanks to Ann Cooper for sharing her perspectives on healthier foods for kids. If you'd like to find out for yourself what lunch is like in Boulder Valley today, you can go and get a lunch. Call the school ahead of time, bring a few dollars, and you can have one of the healthiest lunches in Boulder today. Reporting for KGNU, I'm Shelley Schlender.